Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, January 14th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, API Chief, Venezuela tops watch list. Mike Summers says it's the biggest energy story after the capture of President Maduro. By Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Geopolitical developments are attracting the attention of executives at the American Petroleum Institute. The biggest energy story right now is Venezuela, said Mike Summers, API President and Chief Executive Officer, during a media call ahead of the organization's annual State of American Energy event. Venezuela sits on some of the world's largest reserves and, until corruption and unrest took hold, was the world's largest oil producer at about 3.7 million barrels a day. Today, he said, it produces less than North Dakota, at under 1 million barrels a day. Following the capture of former Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, Summers said U.S. oil companies are interested in President Donald Trump's efforts to rebuild the South American nation's energy infrastructure. But first, he told reporters, there are key prerequisites that must be met before investment dollars flow, beginning with security. Security of personnel and of the infrastructure. Policy changes in terms of contracts and the rule of law are also needed, he said. Summers said API executives and members are also watching events in Iran, which could also impact oil markets. Imports from the Middle East are at a generational low. The U.S. is now the world's largest producer, producing four times more oil and natural gas than Venezuela and Iran combined, he said. That means U.S. oil producers have provided stability and insulated consumers from geopolitical uncertainty, he said. The state of U.S. oil is strong, but is entering a new era we call the demand decade, driven by technology, industry, and population growth, he said. This historic demand growth is prompting the API to focus on helping develop policies that embrace growth, said Dustin Meyer, Senior Vice President of Policy, Economics, and Regulatory Affairs. The argument that U.S. oil production had peaked and additional infrastructure was not needed has collapsed under the realization of growing demand for gasoline, oil and natural gas, electricity, and liquefied natural gas, he said. Topping API's list of policy priorities is comprehensive legislative permitting reform, Meyer said. It takes too long to permit infrastructure projects under the current system, he said. Bipartisan reform is needed to protect permitting from various political swings. We believe permitting reform is part of affordability, he added. Summers explained that with energy demand rising, the inability to build needed infrastructure like transmission lines, pipelines, and export facilities would leave the U.S. behind in the race for artificial intelligence development. A second priority is access to energy development in federal waters and on federal land, Meyer said, including lease sales and establishing a durable long-term leasing framework for federal lands and waters, and in Alaska. Third is protecting America's energy advantage at home and abroad, including ensuring extraterritorial rules like the European Union's corporate sustainability due diligence and EU methane regulation do not disadvantage U.S. producers. We believe every energy system will have to be supported to meet demand, Summers said. The basis will continue to be oil and natural gas, and with electricity generation, natural gas particularly. This article is entitled, Arlington Road Gets Extension, Connecting It to State Highway 191, by Luke Diaz, staff writer. The City of Midland has announced the completion of an extension of Arlington Road from State Highway 191 to Deauville Boulevard in West Midland. Although just a few hundred feet long, the extension is expected to provide easier navigation for residents in the Legacy North neighborhood to get on to State Highway 191's frontage road and subsequently easier access to Midland proper. It will also likely provide easier access to individuals accessing the forthcoming Wildcatter Trail and the Cavender Group's new Mercedes-Benz dealership. This article is entitled, PSP Announces Infant Audiology Clinics in New Mexico, by Trevor Hawes, editor. As part of its mission to improve healthcare in the Permian Basin, the Permian Strategic Partnership has announced the launch of two new infant teleaudiology clinics in Artesia and Hobbs, New Mexico. Expanding access to early hearing detection and intervention services in southeastern New Mexico. Operated by the New Mexico School for the Deaf, the clinics will use teleaudiology technology to connect families with licensed pediatric audiologists, help reduce long wait times, and close care gaps in rural communities. The Hobbs Clinic is supported by the J.F. Maddox Foundation and PSP, while the Artesia Clinic is funded through PSP and multiple philanthropic partners. Leaders from NMSD, PSP, and partner foundations said that early diagnosis of hearing differences or hearing loss in infants is critical to preventing language and cognitive delays and improving long-term developmental outcomes. The Artesia Clinic is expected to begin serving infants this month, with ribbon-cutting ceremonies for both clinics planned for April. This article is entitled, Re-elected Council Members Take Oaths of Office, by Luke Diaz, staff writer. The newest members of Midland City Council were sworn in at their inauguration ceremony on Monday, January 12th. Mayor Lori Blong, District 3 Councilman Jack Ladd, and District 4 Councilwoman Amy Stretcher Burks began their new terms at the ceremony at Bush Convention Center. I think we are fortunate that we have mayors who make $75 a month step up and serve, and to have city council members that show up and serve and make $25 a month. To have council members with the professionalism that they've shown, said former Judge Keith Stretcher, Burks's father, who also swore his daughter in. I always think back to 1984, when former Mayor Ernie Angelo and then-Mayor Thane Adkins fought so hard to preserve the way we elect the mayor and our council members at large from a lawsuit. 40-some-odd years ago, that decision was made, and we're still following it. Blong, who previously served one term as District 4 councilman, is entering her second term as mayor. As Midland's councilmen have a 3-term limit in a specific position, she has the option to run for one more term as mayor in 2028. Accompanying Blong at the ceremony was her husband. Every single one of us, all 7 people on our city council, are actively raising children right now. We are families that are invested in this community, Blong said. I do believe that Midland is one of the best places in the world to raise a family, and I want it to stay that way. We really do have an excellent council that has weathered some difficult things just in the last 6 years, such as COVID and economic challenges. We don't always agree, but that debate, I think, leads us to better decisions, and so I'm really thankful for them. Blong cited some of the successes she had during her previous term, including $116 million in savings, Costco, workforce growth versus a state-low unemployment rate, the completion of the 2017 road bond under budget, a reduction of violent crime by 10%, the resolution of the fire pension fund, water security, Midland International Air and Spaceport expansion, and the creation of various fun events. She hopes to continue infrastructure and quality of life successes in her new term, such as with the Beale Park renovations and Zoo Midland. Ladd is entering his third and final term as a District 3 councilman. Ladd says he does not intend to run for local office in Midland again. Accompanying Ladd at the ceremony was his wife and two daughters. "I think this is one of the harshest campaign seasons I've ever been a part of," Ladd said. "It just seems like campaigns are getting meaner and more cruel. One of the things that I felt so proud of Midland was that we rejected cruelty. We came forward and decided that we were going to be better than that. Because you've seen what happens in other communities when you're not vigilant, when you're not paying attention to local elections and how important they are. So my ask of all of you today is that we've got all these upcoming elections. Pay attention to local races because they do matter, and the people in these positions matter, and it can be the difference between success and failure. So make sure that you vet your people that are going to be in public office and make sure that they have the same kindness and integrity as we expect in the rest of the community." Ladd said he hopes to continue with quality of life in Midland, particularly for young families. He specifically highlighted parks, the Wildcatter Trail, and the Omni Midland Hotel. Birks is entering her second term on City Council with the option to run again in 2028 as well. Accompanying Birks at the ceremony, alongside the aforementioned Judge Stretcher, were Birks's mother, husband, and three daughters. "I secured over 3,000 votes and ran unopposed, which shows the trust you've placed in me to continue serving this community during my first term," said Birks. "My daughters, Betsy and Lacey, would go door to door and ask people to vote for their mom. Who's going to say no to them? As I begin this next term, I do energized and focused. There's more to accomplish, stronger neighborhoods, safer streets, and continued economic growth and infrastructure that keeps up with the pace of this city." Birks cited different past and ongoing infrastructure projects as the things she is most proud of from her previous term, even joking that all the major ones were taking place in her district. She specifically cited Zoo Midland, Costco, Beale Park, and the Briarwood expansion in this regard. This is the Life Tributes column. Hazel Janetta Harper, March 22, 1947 to January 5, 2026. "It is with deep sorrow that we announce the passing of Hazel Janetta Harper, a beloved educator, devoted family member, and cherished friend, who departed this life on January 5, 2026 at the age of 78. Born on March 22, 1947, in Biloxi, Mississippi, Hazel was the daughter of Oland and Irma Grady. Hazel is survived by her beloved husband, Augustus Harper Jr., her son, Trey Harper, and her cherished grandson, Bryson Harper. She is preceded in death by her parents, Oland and Irma Grady, as well as her brothers, Larry and Van Grady. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that memorial donations be made to the Midland Food Bank in her honor. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. June Kimmel, January 10, 1954 to December 31, 2025. June Kimmel, 71, of Odessa, passed away on December 31, 2025. A celebration of life service will take place on Wednesday, January 14th at 12 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. A viewing will be held earlier that day from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Jeremy Adair. Jeremy Adair, 45, of Midland, passed away January 7th. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, January 17th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. This is the Life Tributes column. Mary Joyce Parson, October 28, 1928 to January 10, 2026. Mary Joyce Parson passed away on Saturday, January 10th, surrounded by family and friends. Mary was born on October 28, 1928 in Winters, Texas. Her family moved to Midland in 1935. Her mother died when she was in the first grade. Mary and her three brothers were raised by their great-grandmother. She attended Midland's first North Ward and finished at Midland High School. Later in life, after the death of her husband, Billy E. Parson, she went to work for MISD driving a school bus. She drove for almost 20 years. She was a faithful member of Crestview Baptist Church for over 40 years. Mary was preceded in death by her husband, Billy E. Parson, her three brothers, J.S. Patton, Richard Sonny Patton, and Lawrence Durwood Patton. Mary's surviving siblings are her sister, Betty Blackman, of Denham Springs, Louisiana, and brother Darrell, Linda Patton, of San Angelo. Mary is survived by her sons, Randy Allen, of Friendswood, Texas, Doyle Allen Delane, of Arlington, Jock Tom Allen, Alicia of Midland, and Ferris Parson, Patty of Midland, and her daughter, Sally Taylor Oglesby, Bill Oglesby of Midland. She is also survived by 5 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, please consider donations to Hospice of Midland or Meals on Wheels. Visitation will be held at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, January 14th. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, January 15th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow the service at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Rick Kimple, September 18, 1951 to January 1, 2026. Rick Robin Kimple, 74, died January 1, 2026 in Roswell, New Mexico. Born September 18, 1951 in Colorado Springs, Colorado, to Robert Bob Llewellyn Kimple and Elizabeth Betty Jean Lindsay. Rick was preceded in death by his father on December 2, 2024, his mother on November 19, 1995, his wife Rebecca Munoz, grandparents Norman and Avis Thompson Kimple, and Donald and Abby Jensen Lindsay. He is survived by his son Rick Robin Kimple Jr. with wife Stacy and children Drew and Haley of Conroe. His son Caleb Norman Kimple, with wife Madeline and daughter Rebecca of Phoenix, his former wife and mother of his sons, Margaret Kathleen Kimple, and her daughter Terry. He is also survived by brothers Monty Kimple, Tony of Belleville, Texas, and Rocky Kimple, Tonya of Mobile, Alabama. Services will be held at Crossroads Assembly of God, 1224 West Country Club Road, Roswell, New Mexico, on Saturday, January 31st, at 2 p.m. Jeans are fine. Instead of flowers, the family requests donations to the Roswell Humane Society, New Mexico Senior Olympics, or Crossroads Assembly of God in Roswell. Joan Cervenka Cobb, June 22, 1930, to January 8, 2026. Joan Cervenka Cobb went to be with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on Thursday, January 8th, at the age of 95. Joan was born in San Angelo in 1930 to Bernie and Mary Ruth Cervenka. She grew up in Rowena, Texas. After high school, Joan went to Texas Tech in Lubbock. She was dating James Cobb while at Tech, and they married in Lubbock in August of 1951. James passed away in 2012, and Jo continued to live in Midland until October of 2017, when she moved to be near her children. Jo is survived by her sister, Linda Hall of Southlake, Texas, her daughter, Janet Cobb of Cedar Creek, Texas, her daughter, Sherry Cobb of Conroe, Texas, and her daughter, Brenda, and husband, Gary James of Conroe. Their son, Branson James, and his wife, Sarah, their children, Jacqueline and Christian, their son, Philip James, and his wife, Megan, and their two children, Adeline and Avery, their daughter, Christy Schultz, and her husband, Dallas, and their three sons, Wyatt, Waylon, and Wade. A visitation will be held at Kashner Funeral Home, located at 801 Tees Road in Conroe, Texas, on January 16th from 5 to 7 p.m., A graveside service will take place at Rowena Protestant Cemetery in Rowena on January 17th from 1 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. Gilbert Barboza, July 29, 1947 to January 7th, 2026. Gilbert Barboza of Midland passed away on January 7th in Midland. Gilbert was born in Westlake, Texas, to Rita Solis Barboza and Antonio Barboza on July 29, 1947. He married Esperanza Hope Jimenez on September 19, 1970 in La Mesa. Gilbert was preceded in death by his father, Antonio Barboza, his mother, Rita Solis Barboza, and his brother, Juan G. Barboza. Gilbert is survived by his wife, Hope Barboza, his sons Gilbert Barboza Jr. and wife Christine, Michael Barboza and partner Daniel Ball, brothers and sisters Tony Barboza, Carolina Aldape, Orfalinda Barboza, Rolando Barboza, Ruben Barboza, Raymond Barboza, Aurora Palamas, as well as four grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. Funeral services were held at 2 p.m. on Tuesday, January 13th at Dawson County Cemetery in La Mesa, with Reverend Sylvester D'Souza officiating. Arrangements were entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home in Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. James Patillo, September 10, 1942 to December 28, 2025. It is with a heavy heart and great sadness we say goodbye to James L. Jim Patillo of Midland. He succumbed to a prolonged illness and passed away peacefully in Midland on December 28, 2025. Jim was born in San Angelo, September 10, 1942, to Rodney G. Tex Patillo and Mary Barnett Patillo. He grew up in Monahans before moving to Lubbock, where he attended Texas Tech University. It was there he met and married the love of his life, Jane Ellen Jones Patillo. They were happily married for 61 years. After retirement, Jim and Jane moved to Capitan, New Mexico. They were active members of First Baptist Church of Ruidoso until recently, when they moved back to Midland. At Jim's request, there will not be a funeral or memorial service. In a private ceremony, family will scatter his ashes in a horse pasture. He will ride like the wind toward heaven. He is survived by his wife, Jane, his daughter, Paige Walters of Florida, her husband, Joseph, and grandchildren, Kate, Grace, Beck, and Claire, his son, Scott Patillo of Midland, his wife, Carla, and grandchildren, Jake and Madeline. He also leaves behind two great-grandchildren, Luke and Layton, and his sister Jan Holloman of Alamogordo, New Mexico. Raul Perez Flores. Raul Perez Flores, 90, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, January 7th. Rosary will be Friday, January 23rd at 9 a.m., with a memorial mass to follow at 10 a.m., all at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Commitment of cremains to follow at Fairview Cemetery. Memorial Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Joan Sue Brotherton Brehm. Joan Sue Brotherton Brehm peacefully passed away on January 2nd in Midland at the age of 75. The family will receive friends for a visitation on Thursday, January 15th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held Friday, January 16th at 10 a.m. at Bellevue Baptist Church, followed by a graveside committal at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Sherry Diane Tejas. Sherry Diane Tejas, 63, of Midland, passed from this life on January 9th in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home in Midland. Cynthia Pacino. Cynthia Pacino, 57, of Odessa, passed from this life on January 9th in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home in Midland.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 15th. Tensions erupt at city council meeting. One attendee was removed amid frustrations over a proposal to increase drainage fee. The story was written by Luke Diaz. Frustrations that have been rising since the final Midland City Council meeting of 2025 over a proposed increased drainage fee finally came to a head at the first Midland City Council meeting of 2026. Tensions boiled over at Tuesday's meeting, with one attendee pulled from her chair and forced out of council chambers by the chief of police. Dozens of Midlanders attended the meeting to make their voices heard about the increase in drainage fees regarding the ordinance for Title 11 of the Midland City Code. City Council says their frustrations are being directed toward the wrong place. The fees come as the result of an agreement with Midland ISD after the passage of the district's $1.4 billion school bond. After it had passed in November 2023, it became apparent that roads and infrastructure projects were not included. This has forced the City of Midland to pay for the majority of these projects with money it says it doesn't have. Quote, "There's been a lot said about what can be spent with those dollars and why this wasn't absorbed with that," said City Manager Tommy Gonzalez, whose staff has been tasked in the past month to find further dollars to help relieve the needed cost. Quote, "That is truly the exception. I mean, MISD is called independent for a reason. They don't report to council or city staff. We did work with them. We do have a good relationship with them. We don't always get everything we ask from them, and neither do they. So, I don't want to give the council or any of the public the illusion that this happens all the time, because it does not." End quote. In particular contention is the Midland High School project, which is being built on the site of the former Ranchland Hills Golf Club. The district purchased the property in early 2019. The plan is to build a 3,800-student high school at the site, which is at the intersection of Wadley Avenue and Fairgrounds Road. Wadley is only two lanes in front of the property and will need to be expanded to support the influx of traffic from the school, as well as the recently completed Fairgrounds extension north of Loop 250 into fast-growing Northeast Midland. MISD's bond didn't include funding for road expansion. Now the city is left footing much of the bill, and it plans to pay for the $18 million project by increasing the drainage fee. Many residents spoke out loudly during the meeting, both at the podium and from their seats. they pleaded with City Council to not pass the ordinance. City Council said it had no choice. Quote, "I can say that I never wanted to be in this position, and a lot of the things that have been said, you know, were kind of at a crossroads where I understand that people want us to say no. I want to say no," said Councilman-at-Large John Burkholder, who said he was involved in the process to find efficiencies with city staff. Quote, "There's also the realization, too, that things have to be paid. At the end of the day, this is what's really tough because we do have contractual obligation. But that's neither here nor there. This is the situation that we're at today. We're here trying to find the best solution for now. This is not a thing that I don't think any of us want to do, but this is something that we're prioritizing," end quote. Removed by force. At the beginning of the meeting, Mayor Lori Blong recited Section 42.05 of the Texas Penal Code, disrupting meeting or procession, which gives her the authority to remove a person from the meeting if they are found to be deliberately obstructing these proceedings and can even result in a Class B misdemeanor. Several residents continued to test the patience of City Council, with former District 3 candidate Shandy Williams pulled out of her seat and removed. Williams interrupted Blong as the mayor was giving a final warning to rowdy attendees. Fed up, Blong asked Midland Police Department officers to escort Williams out. Williams briefly stood up in protest, but then sat back down and refused to get up after Police Chief Greg Snow walked up to her. Snow asked Williams three times to get up before eventually pulling her from her seat and walking her out, followed by City Attorney Nicholas Tulay Crump. Williams explained to the Reporter-Telegram after the meeting that she and others were angry that City Council was pressing a resident to give their address on the record during public comment period, despite the city attorney saying they didn't have to. Quote, "They were kind of harassing him over him not giving his address, and it was getting a bit heated," Williams said. "Council told me to be quiet or I was going to be escorted out. I popped off after that, and I told them I wasn't going anywhere. That's when Chief Snow came over and removed me from my seat. And before I even got outside, the city attorney was already there," end quote. According to Williams' account, Tulay Crump asked Snow if he was arresting her, to which he asked if he wanted her arrested. "He said, no, we can't do that," Williams said. Tulay Crump asked if I would quiet down if I went back into council chambers, and if I agreed to do so, I could go back in, end quote. Just a few minutes after being forcefully removed, she was back in council chambers. Williams described her removal as overzealous. Quote, "There's a reason we have these laws to protect our First Amendment in situations like this when you're going up against government," she told the Reporter-Telegram. "I think City Council didn't want to hear what we had to say. That was apparent and clear. We want them to hear us because at the end of the day, they work for us. This is what happens when you have elected officials who forget who they work for," end quote. Williams added that she has no hard feelings towards Snow for doing his job and even greeted him on the way out. The vote goes through. City Council voted 6-0 to approve the hiked drainage fee. Councilwoman-at-Large Robin Poole was absent from the meeting. The agenda item was amended to add that the fee would be audited and readdressed in the next 12 to 18 months. Quote, "We've made a terrible agreement with MISD, and the City of Midland is now the bailout for MISD," Williams told the Reporter-Telegram at the meeting. that is not the way it's supposed to be. We really need to take a look at our numbers," end quote. Former mayoral candidate Judd Campbell told the Reporter-Telegram that he feels the city should have been active in all parts of the bond process back in 2023. Quote, "The problem is when other taxing entities take on these projects, there are direct and indirect implications for the city," he said after the meeting. "The city has, and I believe the mayor has, a responsibility to present those consequences, present those impacts to the citizens, like when the MISD bond has $1.4 billion of construction projects happening in new areas of the city where we don't currently have infrastructure. We didn't have leadership from the city when the bond was being structured, when the bond was proposed, and when the bond was voted on in an election," end quote. Campbell called the drainage fee increase dishonest. Quote, "The implication that we're imposing the fee to address the drainage needs of the city is just simply false," he said. "It's specifically for the MISD bond infrastructure projects, and it's a permanent fee on people's water bills," end quote. He also questioned the timing of the increase. Quote, "Council voted on taking on the obligation in August, but did not take any action on how to fund it. What followed almost immediately was them going through the budget for the next fiscal year, which they voted on in September. These deliberations for the fee happened after setting the tax rate. They didn't factor the $18 million into the budget at all," end quote. Editor Trevor Hawes contributed to this report. Local labor market holds steady. Layoffs remain muted despite low activity levels. The story was written by Mellon McEwen, oil editor. Continued low crude oil prices and low activity levels have raised concerns about layoffs impacting the basin. Willie Taylor, chief executive officer at the Texas Workforce Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin, has not seen many layoffs in recent months. Quote, "Not insignificant numbers," he told the Reporter-Telegram. "I don't think I saw any WARN notices in the last quarter," end quote. WARN, created by the Worker Adjustment and Retaining Notification Act of 1988, requires most employers with 100 or more employees to provide notification 60 calendar days in advance of planned closings and mass layoffs of employees. Taylor referred to a WARN notice from Chevron last summer when 200 were laid off from the Midland office. Despite low activity levels, Taylor said he has not seen notices from service companies. Quote, "Layoffs may come later after the first quarter," he said. "Unless something happens in the quarter, I really don't anticipate large numbers," end quote. He said he sees continued job demand in a number of areas, from technical to automotive to diesel technicians, healthcare, and education. The region's labor market, quote, "really is holding steady," end quote. Unemployment in the Commission's Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes Midland and Martin counties, was 3.2% in November, up from 3% in November 2024. The Commission did not release October data due to the federal government shutdown. Midland's civilian labor force grew to 106,616 from 104,660 the previous November. Midland also reported 127,400 non-farm jobs in November, up 200 from October's 127,200. For the 12 months from November 2024 to November 2025, Midland added 1,100 jobs for a growth rate of 0.9%. More than 40 MISD student groups showcase programs. Inaugural event featured exhibits and interactive booths from across the district. The story was written by Kesley Salinas. More than 40 student organizations took the spotlight Tuesday morning, showcasing their activities and projects to community members at the inaugural MISD Showcase. Hosted by the Midland Education Foundation, the event featured student exhibits and interactive booths representing campuses from across the district and highlighting programs in academics, fine arts, STEM, career, and technical education, and more. Quote, "This is an opportunity to bring education into our community so folks can see what MISD is doing in 2026, said Anita Gammertsfelter, director of the Midland Education Foundation. The truth of the matter is, unless you have a student in a school, you're probably never going to go in and see how education has changed," end quote. Student booths include robotics teams, JROTC, floral design, UIL academic teams, students in philanthropy, welding students, and more. Students showcased the activities they participated in, including projects they have worked on. The welding students brought their equipment and creations to the event, letting guests see their creations, such as metal flowers, a spider, and an LHS sign. Quote, "We wanted the opportunity for our community to see what teachers do and what they see every day in the classroom, which is students working toward excellence," Gammertsfelter said. "This is an opportunity for our community to know that across the district, the future of Midland is sitting in classrooms and MISD is working hard to educate them," end quote. Gammertsfelter added that students will graduate college, career, and military ready, and that students will be ready to lead the community. Midlanders who attended the event were able to interact with students at each booth, learning about the extracurricular activity, club, or organization. Students greeted guests with smiles, talked about their organization, and answered any questions that were asked. Midland High students Alexis Renee Ramirez, Abigail Celia Gutierrez, and Belen Overa told the Reporter Telegram about the Texas Association of Future Educators, or TAFE, a career and technical program for students interested in teaching. Students enrolled in the Education and Training CTE program participate in TAFE, where students work on projects that they can compete with at area and state conferences. Students also get hands-on experience in the classroom through internships. Quote, "We get to help teach the younger children at a grade level we choose, going from pre-K all the way up to high school," Ramirez said. "We get that hands-on experience of being in the classroom and teaching younger kids, and this gives us internship experience by the time we graduate high school," end quote. Ramirez said that the program boosts students who want to be educators in the future, helping them gain experience in the classroom. TAFE also helps students network and make connections with teachers, professors, and future educators. Quote, "The amazing thing about the program is that we partner with Midland College, so once we graduate high school, we already have 18 college credits going into college," Gutierrez said. "We have a stepping stone so that we can graduate within 2 years instead of 4 years," end quote. Gutierrez said that the dual credit program helps students graduate from college sooner, allowing them to earn their certifications earlier. Quote, having TAFE at our school is such a great thing, and we just want to broaden that and bring it to other schools, Gutierrez said. We want to broaden our horizons so that other schools have this opportunity, end quote. Gutierrez and Ramirez both expressed that it is heartwarming when they step into the classroom they intern at because the younger students get so excited to see them. Quote, I actually didn't want to be a teacher at first, but it really warms your heart being around kids and hearing them call your name or ask for help in the classroom, Ramirez said. It's something that I would like to experience every single day. I want to make an impact on students the way my teachers have made an impact in my life, end quote. Gutierrez said that she had always been told she would be a great teacher, but that she was initially unsure about pursuing a career in education. She added that TAFE helped her realize that she wanted to be a teacher. Quote, I have really enjoyed the experience and making memories through TAFE, she said. I get goosebumps when I talk about how excited little kids get when they see you walk through the door. Teaching is a beautiful thing, and it's something not everyone can do. You really must have a calling for it, end quote. Nonprofit pushes child sex trafficking awareness. Red M warns parents about the dangers of online grooming. The story was written by B.K. Richter. In Texas, the number of child sex trafficking victims is estimated at about 79,000. A human trafficking nonprofit in West Texas, the organization Red M, aims to change those numbers by building awareness for families. Jennifer Kane, president of the Red M West Texas chapter, made a presentation Tuesday emphasizing the prevalence of human trafficking and the need for awareness. During her presentation to PB Steps at the Midland College campus, Kane said human trafficking remains a $5 billion industry affecting millions globally. Her organization, which she said is 100% volunteer-based, donates 80% of funds raised to Reflection Ministries, a charity supporting female survivors. The average age for trafficking varies by gender, she said. For girls, Kane said they are usually between ages 12 and 14. For boys, she said the average age is younger, around age 8. A video featuring leading oil and gas CEOs was shown during her presentation, emphasizing the global crisis of human trafficking and its presence in local communities. It also discussed the vulnerabilities that human traffickers exploit, such as video games and other online platforms. Kane also highlighted the impact of coercion, particularly on children, and the importance of recognizing grooming and brainwashing tactics used by traffickers. Quote, human trafficking is in your neighborhood. A lot of misconceptions are that we have such a high number of children trafficked due to our proximity to the southern border, when, in reality, 75% to 82% of people exiting human trafficking in the United States are U.S. citizens, she explained. For parents and caregivers, Kane explained the process of grooming, including the use of GIFs, love bombing, and isolation to manipulate and coerce victims. She also highlighted the importance of strong parental involvement and the need for children to understand that traffickers can appear as trusted individuals. Kane discussed the role of advocacy in combating human trafficking, including supporting care allies and associates while participating in public awareness campaigns. One of the highlights of her presentation included sharing the work of Reflection Ministries, a partner charity that provides support to female survivors of human trafficking. Additionally, she emphasized the need for small efforts to have a big impact and encouraged individuals to share information and resources to raise awareness. Quote, "Advocacy is not something that we expect everyone to do," she explained. "You know, it's jumping in with the allies and associates and working directly with them, but that's not a step that has to be taken. We are about small efforts, but a big impact," end quote. To report suspicious activities, Kane advised residents to contact the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-888-373-7888.
This is the Dear Abby column. Grandson has distanced himself from family. Dear Abby, my grandson Ethan and his fiancée lived with his mother until 4 years ago. When they moved out, they decided not to give his parents their new address. It has been several years since my daughter has seen her son. Apparently, they occasionally text. Ethan was married 7 months ago. He didn't invite his parents as he felt they would make it about themselves and distract from his day. He said I'd be invited to his wedding and would receive a nice picture from the photographer. The wedding date came and went. I saw pictures on social media, so I knew it had transpired. At the time, my gut feeling was that he felt awkward inviting me and his aunt, but not his parents. In the past, I have sent Ethan a check on his birthday and at Christmas and helped him financially with vehicle repairs. Although I was not invited, I sent a congratulatory card for the wedding with a significant check enclosed. He cashed the check, but did not acknowledge the receipt of the card. Because neither he nor his wife acknowledged my wedding gift, I am debating what to do for his next birthday. Should I ignore the occasion, or be an example of unconditional love and send a card? I will not send him money, as I think it was beyond rude not to acknowledge my wedding check. What would Dear Abby do? Signed, Estranged by Association. Dear Estranged, Dear Abby would recognize that not being invited to the wedding, after being told I would be, was a breach of etiquette. That I lovingly sent a check as a wedding gift, which was cashed with no acknowledgement, would indicate to me that my grandson has chosen to distance himself from me. By all means, send a birthday card if you wish, but please don't be surprised when it too garners no response. Dear Abby, my 25th class reunion is coming up, and I'm debating whether to go, because I'm not sure how to handle a conversation that is sure to come up. I was very close with my classmates until 5 years ago, when my husband and I faced a series of family tragedies that took all of my time and energy. The worst was losing a daughter who would have been graduating this year. I'm ready to connect with my old friends, but how do I deal with casual conversations without making light of the situation or being a wet blanket? If someone asks, "How is your daughter doing?" I need to have a reasonable response that isn't going to be awful for both of us. The thought of having to talk about it makes me want to stay home. Advice? Signed, Undecided in Los Angeles. Dear Undecided, please accept my sympathy for the loss of your daughter. If someone at the reunion hasn't already heard about her death and asks how she's doing, respond with the truth. which is that she passed away several years ago. If someone asks for details, simply say, "You don't want to discuss it further," and change the subject. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.